Page 93 of The Unfolding is the story of Lana Vasquez.
It was like a film reel of my life, like the scenes of alcohol, drugs, the living with your boyfriend, all these different slides. And the last slide was blank. And I heard a voice, and the voice said, "The decision you make right now will change your life forever."
God's story has been unfolding
since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. Growing up in Southern California, Lana Vasquez found herself looking for love in all the wrong places. By the time she was a teenager, she was in and out of abusive relationships, addicted to alcohol and drugs, and spending her nights as a dancer in the clubs of Hollywood. She was living a fast life. But even the glitz and glamour of Hollywood couldn't hide the fact that under it all, she felt desperately empty.
So I was born and raised in Southern California. I knew about Jesus. I say it like this, but I didn't believe in any other God. I didn't believe in Muhammad and Buddha. And so I was raised believing in Jesus. But for me, Jesus was like a famous president on the wall. And I just remember just looking at him, and I would just look and say, "Okay, Jesus, you're there and I'm here. Like, you're dead on the wall. How could you ever be in my life?" You know, like as a little girl, like not really connecting. There wasn't a connect. And then as I got older and getting involved in my later on in my story about just all the things that I got involved in, I just remember thinking, I am such a sinner. I am so unclean. There's such a division between you and me. Like, you, how could you want anything to do with me? And you're up there. And I'm down here. You know, how could you even relate to my life? And I just remember that distance. Like, even though I didn't know that that's what it was, because nobody ever shared the gospel with me and nobody ever told me that, but I could feel that separation from God. And I can feel that distance from Jesus. And I can feel everything that I had done had separated me from him. And I just remember knowing that and feeling that. And so I was raised in a like dysfunctional home. My parents had me at a very young age. My mom was 16. My dad was 18. And they were so young, they were still partying and different things. So we were introduced to alcoholism and would see all their parties and all their friends come over. And my dad had an anger problem. And so he would get drunk and he would beat us, which eventually would lead to my mom leaving when I was 13 years old. So we were raised around that. So I started drinking, started hiding my dad's beers on the side of my bed when I was 12 years old about. And then just being in that environment of anger, that environment of my dad coming home late at night and just drinking away, you know, the paycheck, and then just the fighting and then the abuse and just all of that, you know, coming in. So at 13, when they got divorced, my dad left and we were raised with my mom. I would say I was already starting to get in trouble be a troubled teenager, I guess you would call it. I was already starting. It was very, it was minor. And then when my dad left, now looking back, I could see it put an even greater hole in my heart. So I just started looking for love in all the wrong places. And as a 13-year-old girl that doesn't have a dad, you know, just bad relationships and bad choices and just very extreme. It was kind of like I grew up really, really fast. And then from there, from 13, then you get to 17, 18 and had gang member boyfriends, moved in with my gang member boyfriend when I was 18 and sold drugs out of our house. Then from there, just really got involved in the Hollywood club scene. And I was a go-go dancer in the clubs of Hollywood. And it's a very dark, dark world that is. And it looks all lights and flashing and dancing and but in it is very empty and very dangerous, actually, in a lot of dangerous situations, very dark. I saw a lot of things at a young, very young age. I was already an alcoholic and I actually developed epilepsy because we would party all night and dance all night and it would be till 3 in the morning. And so from that, I started having seizures to the point where I almost died multiple times. And I wouldn't take they prescribed me Dilantin, and I wouldn't take it because it wouldn't let me go and dance all night. It would make me drowsy and sleepy. And so I wouldn't take the medicine. So then I'd have another seizure. So I actually had my license revoked for a year because I wasn't taking medicine. So I was diagnosed with epilepsy, full on epilepsy. And from that, it just got deeper and deeper, deeper drugs, started doing drugs that would keep me awake, that we could party and we could dance all night. And so we started doing, I started doing more drugs and things that would keep me awake. And you're talking all of this before the age of 19.
Wow.
And now, and if you know me, my personality is very extreme, obviously. And so it was kind of like I was in a full blown throttle to crash into the wall and destroy my life. And it just got really faster and heavier and darker and deeper. And my dad kind of came back into our life, and my mom got remarried. My dad got remarried. So I was, and I always, when I turned 18, I left the house. So I was very independent. And so it was just a real disconnected, really dark time. And I just tried to drown it with alcohol, with the lifestyle, with all of that. I always somehow maintained a job. I was taught very strong work ethics as a kid from my mom and dad. They're both upper level management. And so for some reason I'd party all night, or somehow I'd party all night and then go to work the next day. So it wasn't like you could tell I was, you know, overdosing in a hotel room, you know, but at the same time I would wake up in the hospital and literally have a doctor standing over me because I had a seizure when I was doing drugs. And so there was multiple times I got in a couple full on car accidents where they literally couldn't believe that we didn't die. Two major ones, actually, that should have killed us, that I wasn't wearing my seatbelt. I was driving hungover, and literally the bar saved our life, me and another young girl. And so, it is the hand of God was on my life. I'd have a seizure I'd come home from partying a couple days in a row or 3 days in a row. This is when I moved back home with my mom, and she said that she just heard a thud, and all of a sudden, like, she couldn't get in because I'd locked the door. They had to take the doors off the hinges, but they just heard the shower water falling, and literally she came in and my body was blue, and she had to give me mouth to mouth resuscitation. Oh. I had, had a knockdown and had a seizure in the shower, and I almost died. And then there was another time, this is actually miraculous. And this is how my best friend came to know the Lord. You have to know, all of us in the area that I'm at in Southern California, that I was at in Southern California, we did not know one Christian. There was nobody that invited me to church. I did not know of a Christian church. Nobody ever told me about Jesus. I thought I had all the Jesus there was. I thought I knew all the Jesus there was to know. And I thought I did not know that he could help me. I did not know. Nobody shared Christ with me. Nobody shared the gospel. And me and all my friends, we did not have any Christian friends. We did not know of any church. We did not have anywhere else to go. Like, nobody invited us. Nobody told us that there was another way to live. And so this is all we knew. And this, she was my best friend and still a dear friend to this day. But we were in actually a motel in Mexico. We had been partying all night. And all of a sudden, she said that I started to have a seizure in this motel with everyone that was partying there. And somebody went to put a spoon in my mouth to hold, because I was choking on my tongue, they thought. And somebody went to put a spoon in my mouth. And my friend, because she wasn't in her right mind, she like went and threw up because she didn't know what to do. And so she kind of freaked out and went and threw up. And she said, out of nowhere, this big man came out of nowhere. She said, Lana, we were in a motel room. We would have been able to see if this big guy, this tall, big guy was there. He said he wasn't there before, Lana. Said he came out of nowhere and he said, stop. And he put me on my side and he rubbed my back and I came out of it. And basically she said, Lana, that was an angel. She said, I've never believed until now because I knew you and I knew what happened. And I was in that room and I knew what happened. happened. And I mean, you're in the middle of Mexico. Where are you going to go to a hospital? This was 30 years ago. You know, where are you going to go to a hospital? Remember what, 25 years ago? I mean, it is a dangerous situation and I could have died. And I have story after story like that of literally near death experiences where I shouldn't have gotten out. You know, I should have been trafficked myself. I mean, just different things that should have happened to me, but the hand of God was on my life. Another big part of my story is I actually was getting out of a controlling, abusive relationship. And I remember just not knowing a way out. I felt so stuck. And at that time, it was just where I was just a mess. Everything was a mess. My body, my soul, my heart, everything. And I just wrote a suicide note to God, basically. And I had this little journal that had a whole bunch of angels on it that my grandma gave me for Christmas. And so I didn't know how to journal. So that day I just wrote a letter to God. And I basically said, God, you know, if you're such a good God, then why am I living a life of hell? Like, if you are so good, why would you have me to be born into this? And it was, honestly, it was like my suicide note to God at 18, 19, around there. And I just remember tears falling on that paper. And I said, I really feel like I don't care if I go to hell because I feel like I'm living in hell right now. I really don't care if I live or die.
The fast living, the life of darkness and drugs, it was all catching up with Lana. And there didn't seem to be any reason to have hope. Part two of her story is coming up. But first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute.
Hi, I'm Habib Habib. In my long career in business, I learned a solid principle. You get what you pay for, and you get more of what you reward. For example, a business that rewards high production will get more high production, but may not get high quality. So when I wanted better customer service, I rewarded incidents of superior care and service and publicized it to all the other employees. Dwelling on good performance and rewarding them always yielded more incidents of high performance. When applying this to our family, instead of nitpicking and dwelling on their faults, we find what they are great at and compliment it. Words like, you're such a great friend to your buddies, and you're awesome at showing empathy without sacrificing your principles. Maybe even say, I admire that you're way more kind than I was when I was your age. Believe me, it's magical when we as parents dwell on our children's good attributes. I'd rather have a messy room, but a kind child. Read more at HabibHabib.com.
And now part two of Lana Vasquez's story.
You know, if you're such a good God, then why am I living a life of hell? Honestly, it was like my suicide note to God. I really don't care if I live or die. And so that was my life before. And then one day we were getting ready. There was a big Hollywood club premiere and I was a go-go dancer for one of the radio stations. So they were going to be there and we were the dancers. So it was like a big deal. And so me and my friends were getting ready and my aunt had actually become a Christian 6 months before. You have to remember our family didn't know any Christians. We didn't know what a Christian was. And so we thought they were like a cult or something. We thought, you don't smoke, you don't cuss, you don't drink at the Mexican barbecues anymore. You are a cult. You know, something is wrong with you. And so we kind of, it's so sad, but true. And we kind of, you know, ostracized them from our family. And so I hadn't talked to my aunt for 6 months because they had become Christians. And I used to be very close with my aunt. And so all of a sudden, something on the inside of me said, pick up the phone and call your aunt. With all of that, like I didn't know what was happening. And so I just went over to my friend's phone, picked it up. I was around the corner. My friend lived down the street from my aunt. So I was I picked it up. It was a Friday night. And I picked it up and I said, hi, Aunt Dory. She said, hi, honey. You know, wow, I'm so surprised you're calling me. And I said, yeah, I was just wondering, can I come over for some reason? and she said, sure. And I said, maybe, I don't know, dye my hair or something. I made up something because I didn't know why I was calling her. I didn't know why I was doing that. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know anything. And so she said, sure, come over. And so I went over there, like I was dressed for a Hollywood club. And my aunt looked at me and she's like, honey, why don't you go in and change your clothes? Because we're going to go somewhere right now. And I was like, where are we going? I just got here. And she said, well, we're going to go to church. And I said, on Friday night? I said, I thought only old people went to church on a Friday night. And she said, no, we're going to go to church on a Friday night. You're going to love it. You're going to have fun. And I said, okay. And I had never stepped foot in a Christian church. So I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know my life was going to change forever. I didn't know anything. So I picked up my phone and I called my friend and I said, hey, I'm going to go to church really quick. And then after, I'll meet up with you guys after at the Hollywood Club premiere. And they said, Lana, this is a big deal. What? No, church. What are you talking about? You know, none of my friends had ever stepped foot in church. What are you talking about? We don't go to church. And I said, no, it'll be fine. I said, church isn't late. It'll be over in an hour. I'll be able to get to the club and it doesn't start until 10 anyways. Oh, I can do both. It's easy, you know? And so anyways, I went with my aunt and I was excited because I didn't know what it was something new. I didn't know what to expect. And I walked in and I saw people with their hands lifted. And I saw people my age, actually. And I was 19 at that time. And I saw young people and I saw their hands lifted. I saw tears streaming down their faces. And I just looked around. And the crazy thing was, is that even though it was my first time in church and to ever see people cry and lift their hands, and I looked around and I just thought, wow, like I don't know what this is and I don't know what these people are doing, but I can't deny what I feel right now. This feels right. Like there's something about this that feels right. And I can't deny the peace I feel right now. And I sat down and actually the preacher came out and he was young too. And I thought, oh, I thought preachers were old and bald, you know? And so I was so shocked at all of this. And I'll never forget what the preacher said. This, you have to know, this was 24 years ago. And I remember it like it was yesterday.
Wow.
And he said, you've been trying to fill that hole in your heart with drugs, with alcohol, with relationships. Don't you know that only Jesus can fill that hole in your heart? The one you've been looking for your whole life is here right now, standing at the door of your heart knocking. And if you open up the door, he will come in and you will never thirst again. You will never look again. You will never search again. What you've been searching for your whole life, he's right here tonight. His name is Jesus. And I'll never, word for word, that's what the preacher said, word for word. And it was like he was talking directly to me. And this is the crazy part. At that moment, I had like an open vision, and which is crazy because I didn't know what that was. I was 19 years old, never stepped foot in a Christian church. But this is, let me explain what I saw. It was like a film reel of my life. And I tried the going to college and I didn't have enough self-discipline to keep the focus and the attention in college. I tried just working for my parents in a career and I could do that very easily, but it was just like, whatever. And then the next one was like the scenes of alcohol, drugs, the different stages of my life, the living with your boyfriend, all these different slideshow of my life and the slides. And it's like one of those old Hollywood film reels. Mm-hmm. And the last slide was blank. And I heard a voice. And the voice said, the decision you make right now will change your life forever. At that same moment, my cousin that was sitting next to me that came with me to church went to put her hand on mine to ask me if I wanted to go up to receive Jesus. At that same time, they had made an altar call. I didn't know because I was so seeing this vision and hearing this. And so they'd made an altar call. And so she had went to ask me to grab my hand, to pull me up, to have me go up. But she said when she turned that I had already ran up to the altar. And this is what I remember. Like I remember this like yesterday. I just remember standing right there in front of the altar. And nobody told me to pray this. It wasn't like this repeat after me, but it just came from my heart. And this is a crazy thing. I just remember there being such a bright light and I had my eyes closed because I was so scared to open my eyes because I thought I'd see God or Jesus on the other side. And I was just crying. And I just remember saying this and I held my hands out, both of my hands in front of me. And I said, God, I've made a mess of this life that you've given me. My heart's a mess. My body's a mess. My mind's a mess. I've just made a mess of it all. And I said, and I feel like all of it is in a million pieces. I feel like my heart, my mind, my body is in a million pieces. And I said, and God, I give these million pieces to you. And if you can do anything with them, they're yours. And at that moment, when I just said that, like, even though it was such a young life, I just ran it so hard and so fast, just pedal to the metal with everything. When I gave him those pieces, it was like warm honey from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. And it felt like wherever that honey touched, it was like liquid love. Wherever it touched, it healed and it cleansed. And I felt like I had never sinned. I felt like I had never been touched before. You know, one part that I didn't get to mention was that I actually was sexually abused as a young girl, as a little girl at my babysitter's house. And it happened at least a year, as much as I could remember, because I was about 8 and I acted out in school. They wanted to hold me back. And so I think at that time, I felt so shameful and so dirty as a young girl that it led to so many other things. Mm-hmm. I think it led to the alcoholism. It led to drowning out that feeling, that shame and that guilt. It led to all of that. And it was an open door. And so when that God's liquid love like just went from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet, I felt like I had never been touched. I felt like I had never sinned. I felt clean and whole and pure. And I just remember like, I couldn't stop smiling. I couldn't stop crying. And when I went out, I felt like I saw in color. I didn't realize I was seeing in black and white, and the sky was blue and the grass was green and I could see in color. I just remember looking at my aunt and just saying, what? I can't stop crying. I can't stop smiling. What happened to me? Mm-hmm. And my aunt said, it's Jesus. And now you'll never be the same again. And I say it like this. This is such a part of what I do now at 43 years old. I say that I was rescued to rescue. Like, I know that I was rescued. I should have been the one trafficked in those circles that I was in. There's so many things. And I know that God rescued me out of that, out of all of my friends. They saw me and they saw the difference. And one by one, they said, we knew you. You were the worst of all of us. And there's hope for us. If he could save you, then he could save us. There's hope for us. And one by one, my friends started coming to the Lord. And I just know, honestly, that the Lord plucked me out of that situation. He rescued me to rescue. And I say two things. At that altar, somehow I knew to do this. And I made two personal vendettas for God. And one is I would protect and fight for innocent children because I know what happens when it creates a hole in their heart. And that's what leads them down the road to other things. And so one, I would protect and fight for innocent children in the form of sexual abuse, child trafficking, child prostitution. Like, I knew that that's what I was supposed to do at that altar. I knew I was rescued to rescue. I knew there was a purpose. It could have been anybody else. It could have been any of my friends, but he rescued me and I knew there was a purpose. And number two, I promised and vowed that I would tell as many people about Jesus in my lifetime because nobody ever told me. Nobody ever gave me a choice. Nobody ever gave me a chance. Nobody said, you don't have to live this destructive path you're living. There's another way. Let me introduce you to Jesus. Nobody even invited me to church. Nobody even gave me an opportunity to turn them down. You know, I didn't even have a choice. And the first time I heard the gospel is the very first time I received it. So those are my two personal vendettas for God. And so I went out and I called my friends and I said, I met Jesus and I'm never coming back. I met the man of my dreams and I'm never coming back. I knew I would never go back. And my friends to this day, like they still joke and say, remember that time you went from bar girl to Mother Teresa in 0.3 seconds? And so they joke that I need to write a book to bar girl to Mother Teresa in 0.3 seconds. And so I never went back. From there, God just did a quick work in my life. And within 3 months, I was teaching in Sunday school, and it was so funny because I wasn't raised in church, so I didn't know the Bible stories for children. So I would have to study the night before to teach my Sunday school class.
Oh, wow.
So I would be learning with the kids in kids' teach. So it was just so, it's so funny how the Lord, you know, just what he does and how he does. And so within 3 months, I was already teaching in Sunday school. Within 6 months, I was a youth leader, rescuing other youth, filling my car and bringing as many kids to church as I could. And then street witnessing on the weekends and telling people what the Lord had done for me. I was instantly healed of epilepsy. I've never had a seizure again since 19 years old. And
wow.
I'm 43 now without any Dilantin, without anything. I've never had a seizure again. Instantly healed of epilepsy. I was delivered from drugs and alcohol. Have never touched any of it ever again. And God saved my family. That dad that was alcoholic and abusive now goes to the very church I got saved in, and with my stepmother and my stepbrothers, and my family takes up a whole pew in that church. My mom, my stepdad, my brother, all of them came to the Lord and have come to the Lord in the time. And so I'd say about 85% of my family knows the Lord, maybe almost 90 now.
Wow.
Knows the Lord. And so it from all of this, it was such a ripple effect. And that's what we say here. We have our ministry is called Life Impact International. And this is what I believe. One life, it just takes one life, one changed life has the potential to change their world. When we say change a life, change the world, because it's a ripple effect, right? That mm-hmm. one reaches those 10 around them, and those 10, another 10, and it just creates this ripple effect. So God did a quick work. In 6 months, I was a youth leader. Within 1 year, again, we don't have time for it, but supernaturally, somehow I got to Bible school. I went to Bible school. And within 3 years, went straight from, Tulsa to Thailand to rescue children. And so God just did, and was a full-time missionary within 4 years of knowing the Lord.
Wow.
So it's been a quick work in my heart, in my life. And but now we're looking at 24 years later.
And a lot has happened in those 24 years. If you think the story of how Lana met Jesus is inspiring, wait until you hear the incredible journey, the way God has led her as she became a full-time missionary just 4 years after she met Jesus. She knew that she was rescued so that she could rescue others, but rescuing kids from trafficking, that's hard and dangerous work. It takes supernatural help, and we cannot wait for you to hear that part of her story. We'll share it in next week's episode of The Unfolding. In the meantime, if you want to learn more about Lana and the ministry, head to lifeimpactintl.org. We'll have a link to that on the Unfolding Podcast Facebook page if you want to check it out. By the way, this interview was a first for us. First time we've done an international interview. We spoke to Lana in Thailand, so she was 12 hours ahead. It was 10 o'clock at night when we started the interview. Huge thanks to her for sharing her story with us. And big thanks to you. Thanks for listening, rating, reviewing, and sharing the Unfolding Podcast. Because of your support, this week we crossed over 800,000 downloads of the podcast. That's incredible, and it's all thanks to you. Thanks also to Jason Rackow, the producer who makes every episode sound so good, and to our wonderful sponsor, Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how to unleash the full power of your leadership potential at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.